in a little deeper to our current series at the moment. So for those of you that were here last week or maybe caught up online or were listening at the beginning of this service, to be honest, we started a series last week looking at this idea of building back better. And it's based on the idea that we're all aware in this COVID pandemic world that as we look to the future, as we look to maybe what is next, as we look to this idea of a new normal, what are maybe some of the things that we as followers of Jesus or as church should be thinking about in terms of making sure that things are priorities, making sure that we're holding on to things that we've learnt. Because I think for many of us, we've had time to pause, we've had time to reflect, we've had time to work out what's important to us. So there's three things that Tearfund actually kind of came up with, or Tearfund really saw happening across the UK and across the world. And that was the idea, firstly, last week that we looked at was this idea of doing things together rather than alone. So this idea of moving away from individualism and moving more towards how do we do things as community, how do we support one another, how do we look after one another. And many of us have seen that take place through things like WhatsApp groups, through getting to know your neighbours better, through just even walking around your local area for your hours exercise, which is where we were at one point, and actually just speaking to each other that you maybe never spoke to before. And tonight we're going to look at the second part of that, and that's the idea of choosing life, and choosing life for people and for other people, over the idea maybe of materials or over the idea of inequality and injustice that we see in the world. And as you may have guessed, we wanted to root this in scripture and root this in something really that we could wrestle with as followers of Jesus today and think, well, what does this look like for me? Or what can I learn from the Bible and what does this mean? So we've rooted this in the book of Nehemiah. As I've kind of said, we're doing a kind of like overview of it rather than a chapter by chapter. So last week we were at the beginning of chapter 2. This week we're in chapter 5. So to give you context, and if you're going to be around for the rest of them, I would encourage you to read the entire book just to work out where things slot into place as we go through some of these ideas. But before we dive into Nehemiah tonight, I want to ask if any of you know who this guy is. It should just appear on the screen. So this is a guy called Marcus Rashford. Anyone heard of him recently in the news? Most people are giving me a reassuring nod. I've given you a few clues with the picture there with children eating school meals. And for those of you that maybe don't know or haven't heard of who this person is, he is a football player for both Manchester United and England. But recently has hit kind of like the news or is on everyone's radar because he's been spearheading a movement to make sure that underprivileged children are able to access free food over the holidays. So for those children who are maybe accessing free school meals when they're in school, when they're in education, there's always been this kind of question or this problem around, well, what happens during the school holidays? And obviously with schools being closed for such a long time at the beginning of the year, there was this question raised about what happens, how are those children fed? Initially, the government responded quite positively to that. And in the Easter in England, they give out vouchers and make sure that those children were fed. But it was looking like as we went into the summer and into October, that actually the government weren't going to maintain that promise or couldn't maintain that promise. And we're basically going to have to allow the children just to be at home and not really worry about that subject. But what Marcus Rashford did was he created a campaign for further action against this food poverty. And he began this in June, and when the problem around the summer holidays came up that there maybe wasn't going to be the support in place for these children. And he basically started a campaign, started a petition, raised the profile of this issue. And following that, the government basically came and agreed that they would provide vouchers over the summer holidays for 1.3 million children in England who were receiving free school meals in term time to receive that support during the holidays as well. And as I say, in June, that led to a kind of a change in policy and allowed the children to claim them during the summer holidays as well. Seemed like a great end to the story. But obviously, as we know, child poverty has not been eliminated anytime recently that I'm aware of. And this crisis continues to grow. And just before the October holidays, there was another kind of campaign, another kind of push to make sure that over the October holidays, the Christmas holidays, and even into Easter 2021, that these same children were going to have that support in place Again, this campaign was kind of championed by Marcus. But a couple of weeks ago, you'll probably know that the government had a debate in the House of Commons, and it was shot. It was kind of taken away. This funding was taken away, and the decision was made not to support this anymore. And it seemed like that a decision had been made, a campaign had been won, and actually that was just a temporary measure and a temporary fix. But for any of you that have been watching the news today, you will know a U-turn happened yesterday afternoon in which Boris Johnson phoned Marcus Rashford to tell him that actually there'd been a change of heart and a bit of a U-turn on this. And actually the government have put a whole support package in place for the next 6 months around this idea of looking after children, supporting children during the holidays with food, but also with activities and events as well to make sure that they're being supported and looked after. That's a great story, isn't it? But I wonder if some of you are thinking, Rob, why on earth are you telling us this? It's telling us about the Bible, not about football or in England. Well, what I want us to do is remember this story as we go into our Nehemiah passage this evening, because I think there's actually quite a lot of similarities between the two. And if we were looking for maybe a kind of verging on modern day Nehemiah or a modern day story on how we can apply some of this to our current context, I think that some of the stuff that Marcus has been up to really feeds into that and really talks into that. And I'll talk you through that as we go through. So Nehemiah, let me just recap and fill you in with where we are so far. So between last week and this week, let's say, in terms of where we've been, Nehemiah has rallied his troops. He's rallied the Israelites and the Jews, and he's brought them together. He's helped them understand that they're in this together, and that was what we looked at last week. This isn't an individual call to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, which is Nehemiah's current vision and current aim, something that has to be done together. He's brought those people together, and the rebuilding of the walls has begun. However, as we touched on last week, opposition was just on the corner, and through chapters 3 and chapters 4, if you go away and read them, you'll see that the opposition increased, and Nehemiah had to put things in place to prevent that opposition from winning and prevailing. But tonight what we see is Nehemiah take a step out of his usual task and focus of rebuilding the walls and rebuilding Jerusalem as a city of God. He takes a step out of that because he focuses on dealing with a particular issue involving food, involving children, and involving equality. And I wonder if we think back to our earlier story, whether this sounds familiar at all. So as we've read this evening, we've read our passage, we've read what's happened. So let's unpack that a little bit. So we see that in the beginning of this chapter, between verses 1 and 5, there are four different groups of people that we're introduced to. Firstly, we're introduced to those people who owned no land but needed food. The population in Jerusalem was increasing. Nehemiah and his officials were bringing back the Jews to this city as they rebuilt it. They were bringing them back together. Therefore, the population was increasing. Therefore, the need for food was greater. However, it's also mentioned in this passage that a famine was taking place. Food was becoming scarce. So as you can see what was happening, population is increasing. The availability of food is decreasing. So any of those without money, without land, without property, without security, found themselves in a position where they were helpless. And when they come to Nehemiah right at the beginning of this chapter, and they come to him for help, they ask him for food, they ask him for money, because they have no way in which to purchase or to grow this food for themselves. Secondly, we meet landowners who have mortgaged their property in order to pay for food. Inflation was on the rise, but as that was happening, they'd mortgaged out what they had, their land, their property, they'd given it away, but they couldn't afford to pay either the debt that they owed or buy their land back, in which would help them grow crops and grow food and be able to prosper. And because of that, what we saw was that debt and inflation was enough to wipe out a person's equality very quickly. All of a sudden, these people, even though they were landowners and they had property, had very little status and were finding themselves in the same kind of ranks or the same kind of grouping, these people that we've already heard about that had no money and no food. I see a bit of a problem coming on here. Thirdly, we've got those who have complained who their taxes were too high and they'd been forced to borrow money to pay those taxes. And when they'd borrowed it, they'd had to give security, just as you would do nowadays. So land, property, even children in some cases here. But actually, when they couldn't afford to pay their debt or they couldn't afford to buy back those things, they were losing them all and not being able to pay at all. So they, again, were also finding themselves in the position where they had no money, they had no food, and they had no access or means of gaining any of it. And then we meet, finally, the wealthy Jews who were exploiting their own brothers and sisters by taking their land and their children for collateral. These are the people that are making money out of this situation, out of this famine, and out of this situation that these people are finding themselves in. So what we're finding here, what we see in these first five verses, is that many of the Jews who'd come back to Jerusalem to help Nehemiah rebuild this city of God had to choose between starvation and servanthood. And many of them were finding themselves in the position where they were selling everything they had, even children and family members, to be able to survive and to be able to continue. And this brings us to our first lesson from Nehemiah. It's already on the screen, but it's that we're all equal. Verse 5 tells us that very clearly. When it says, now our flesh is as the flesh of our brothers and our children as their children. And then it goes on to say, yet we are forcing our sons and daughters to be slaves. And some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but it is not in our power to help it. For other men have our fields and our vineyards. To any follower of Jesus in the 21st century, there shouldn't be new news that we're all created equal. So when we see inequality, we know that there is an imbalance in the world that goes back to the beginning of time when sin entered. What we have to remember is that when Jesus went to the cross for each of us, he didn't do it for the rich or the poor. He didn't do it for the young or the old or the inexperienced and the experienced. He did it for all of humanity. So the idea of us being all equal is just as relevant today as it was back then. Nehemiah knew when he was facing this situation that the people and the land belonged to God, and he would not have either used by anyone for personal gain. And that's just exactly the same for today. We see in situations where people are treated unequally, where there's an injustice. And we are called, and the Bible tells us, that in that situation as followers of Jesus, we are to stand against that. We are to stand up for that. And what I saw in some of what Marcus was saying, and some of what he stood up against in terms of that inequality, in terms of children, are some of these similar traits in terms of Nehemiah and how he stood up against that. One of the quotes from some of the letters that Marcus wrote to the media and to the government said, we must start working together and unite to protect our most vulnerable children. No more sticking plasters. Let's face this head on. Let's level up once and for all. Again, the idea of equality, the idea of making it a level playing field for everybody. And that's the thing that this evening, when we're thinking about choosing life as we build back better, what does it look like for us to choose it in a way that means it's equal for everybody in the world and not just the prosperous or the fortunate nations who are more wealthy? But it doesn't just stop there. Nehemiah doesn't just hear the complaints and then go, okay, great, there's an issue here, you're all equal, sort it out. What we see him do, what we saw Marcus Rashford do as well, and what each of us are asked to do about these injustices as well, we find in verses 6 to 13. And that's both anger and action. The first thing that we see in how Nehemiah responds is that he gets angry. Now, this isn't a usual idea that we see in the Bible. And some of you might be thinking, what? Someone in the Bible gets angry? Is that really what it says? Are you sure? Let's check it out. Let's see what it says. Verse 5 says, I, being Nehemiah, was very angry. Pretty clear. Pretty straight to the point. We know Nehemiah was angered and annoyed by this situation. But interestingly, Nehemiah was not a politician who asked, what would be the popular decision right now? He's not a diplomat who asked, what's safe? What's the safest thing for me to do to make sure that I achieve my vision of rebuilding these walls? But here we see Nehemiah act as a true leader and ask, what is right? What is the right thing for me to do now? And what he does is he takes this holy anger against sin. He hears that his own people are sinning against his own people. And he gets angry about it. And we know that he could do this because he had the law of God behind him. And we see this type of anger in other places in the Bible. So when Moses broke the stone tablets of law, or when Jesus saw the hardening of the hearts of the Pharisees, it's that same righteous anger that builds up within them that we know Nehemiah had here. But what he does is he puts his head and his heart together. He doesn't blow off steam. He doesn't go for a run to let his anger out and deal with it later. He doesn't write an angry email and save it in drafts till the next day to make sure that he's written it okay. He goes to God. He took counsel with himself, with his head and his heart, and he thought through the problem and sought God's direction. And this is what we need to do even today when we see inequality and injustice around us. We need to allow ourselves to be filled with anger, to be annoyed, to be allow it to build up in us, because it's that power and that persuasion that's going to bring change. But then, before we go and try and react to it in a humanly way, we need to stop. We need to take it to God and ask him, now what? What do you want me to do with this? Because that is when we see the right action coming through. That's when we see God at work in us and God at work in the situations that we find ourselves in. Interestingly, Marcus Rashford's mum is a Christian. I don't know personally where Marcus Rashford's faith is, but what I see in how he reacted, how he responded, he didn't blame the government for this issue. He didn't go to them and tell them they were wrong. He didn't have a personal vendetta against Boris Johnson or any of his cabinet members. He realized there was an issue. He wanted to work with the government on it. He took his problem to them and said, how can we help? How can we solve this problem? Because he could have just as been as angry and annoyed at the problem of holiday hunger. But he took it a step further, just as Nehemiah did. And we see that in the next section of this passage, that Nehemiah brings charges against the nobles and the officials, and he held a great assembly against them. And when we read through this passage earlier, there are six different appeals that Nehemiah brings to these nobles, six different things that he challenges them on or encourages them to think about. So the first one of those, or the first two of those, is this idea of their love. So in verse 7, we see that Nehemiah reminds the nobles and the officials that they are robbing their fellow people. The word brother is used four times in this section of Nehemiah. And in this section, he reminds them so clearly, you are extracting interest each from his brother. He's reminding them that we're to love one another, that we are equal to one another, that in the eyes of God, that there is no upper or lower limits or levels, but actually that we're equal. And he reminds them of them straight off, that these people are your family. You love them, and therefore, is this something that for someone you love that you would do or you would take forward? And he does this from a position of the word of God. And that's the second thing that he challenges on them, is the word of God. We know it was based on this because of the law of Moses and forbidding Jews to extract interest from one another. So yes, you're allowed to loan things, you're allowed to borrow money, but the idea of extracting interest, of taking things off people, in the law of Moses, that was against that law. And even in some cases, the year of Jubilee, we don't have time to go into that this evening, but the year of Jubilee was the year in which everything was reset and given back to its rightful owner. So we know that there was a law in place to make sure that this very situation didn't happen. However, some of the Jews had become accustomed to the traditions of those around them. We have to remember that Jerusalem is a broken city. People have been scattered all over the nations. They found themselves amongst other cultures, amongst other people, different ways of doing things. And as Nehemiah has called them back and brought them back together, some of those customs and those ideas have come into that city, and they have taken that on board and they've put that into place. And that's what we see happening here. So he reminds them that we don't follow the culture. We don't follow other gods, but actually we follow the law of Moses and we follow the Bible. That's exactly the same for each of us today. So he reminds them of their love for one another. He reminds them of the word of God. And then he moves on to remind them of the redemptive purpose of Israel. So in verse 8, Nehemiah says to these people, we, as far as we are able, have brought back our Jewish brothers who've been sold to the nations. Nehemiah's ultimate vision and reason for being in Jerusalem was to rebuild the walls with the purpose of redeeming God's people. Nehemiah wasn't a property man. He didn't just want to own a city or run a city that had nice, pretty walls. He wanted to do it to rebuild that people, to rebuild that body of people in that place as a holy place of God. The walls were a means to an end, so to speak. And what he was actually seeing here was the walls weren't yet rebuilt, but there were still things happening within that city that were not part of God's redemptive plan. And these actions by their own people were tearing down everything Nehemiah and God were trying to build up. Could it be said that Marcus Rashford is standing up and trying to build back better than some of the leaders that we have in positions of power even today? So he reminds them of their love for one another. He reminds them of the word of God. He reminds them of God's plan and purpose for him and for them and for that city. But he also reminds them of their witness. In verse 9, it says, "So I said, the thing that you are doing is not good. Ought you not to walk in the fear of our God to prevent the taunts of the nations of our enemies?" God called the Israelites and the Jewish people to be lights to the Gentiles. And aren't we called to be the same light today in that darkness? He challenged them on their witness to other people and thought, well, actually, if they can do that, why can't I? Is this God really a loving God and an equal God if he allows them to treat each other like that? And as we endeavor to build back better, surely supporting one another to have a quality to fight and stand against injustice is important even in 2020. Next, we see with his fifth kind of idea or his fifth suggestion, he reminds them of the judgment of God in verse 13. "I also shook out the fold of my garment and said, so may God shake out every man from his house and from his labor who does not keep his promise." We read earlier that the nobles and the official promised to change their ways. They've heard Nehemiah. They understand. They agree to give everything back. So Nehemiah asked them to take an oath in the presence of the priests and the other officials. This makes the promise not just between two people, but actually between him and God, which, just as it is now, is a serious matter. The shaking of the shaking out the fold of his garment is a reminder that they've made that promise, not just in front of him, not just behind closed doors, but actually also in the eyes of God. He's serious about this change, and he's serious about this happening. But also in verse 10, if we go back slightly, he talks about his own personal practice. He says, "Moreover, I and my brothers and my servants are lending them money and grain. Let us abandon this extracting of interest." He reminds them or shows them his own personal practice. And Nehemiah appealed to them here by practicing what he preached. And this is an important lesson that we need to think about this evening as well. Because what we've seen is we've seen how Nehemiah deals with the situation. We've seen how he gets angry. We've seen how he goes to God with this issue and he asks him what to do. And then he gathers the people and he has a conversation with them. He gathers them for counsel, but it doesn't just stop there. Nehemiah then doesn't go, great, we've now fixed that issue. Let's get back to rebuilding the walls. Let's get back to the main thing that we're here for. He goes on in chapter 5 and he talks about how it's actually a lifestyle. It's not a one-off decision. It's not a today I'm going to be equal with other people. Today I'm going to solve this problem and then I'm going to move on. But actually, even for the followers of Nehemiah and of God, and even for us today, we're reminded in this final section that Nehemiah wasn't a leader who said, "Do as I say, not as I do." He was a leader who said, "Follow me. I'm going to get my hands dirty. I'm going to get involved in rebuilding these walls. I'm going to deal with the problems, but I'm also going to stand with you in them. And I'm going to show you how this is done." Just as he mentioned with that witness of Israel earlier. Nehemiah was an official. He was the governor of Judah, of the area. He'd been given so much authority and power by the king of Persia. But what he does is he bucks the trend with other people in his role. He didn't use his official expense account. He didn't tax the people as much as he could. And it's this example that we should follow, aiming for a balanced spiritual attitude towards both money and ministry. Towards how we witness for God, how we witness for Jesus in our workplaces, in our schools, in our universities, in the places that we find ourselves, in our neighborhoods, and also with the money that we've been given. And we must be willing to sacrifice personal gain for the spiritual good of others. What does it look like for us to serve each other well, to serve others before we serve ourselves? Because Nehemiah was also careful not to exploit anyone in any way. Nehemiah and his assistants walked in the fear of the Lord and served honestly, and they got their hands dirty. The fear of the Lord being this idea of respect, of reverence, of understanding who God is and what position he had in their lives. He warned them that judgment day would come. He warned them that when they made that promise in front of the eyes of God, if they did not keep that, there would be questions. There would be a time when God asked them why they made those decisions and why they chose to do what they did. And we see that Nehemiah got his hands dirty through the account of them rebuilding the walls. Him and his officials, his brothers, they all got stuck in and also shared what they had with others, because he knew that his witness, he knew that the way he led and the decisions that he made would have an impact on doing these things together. D.L. Moody says, a theologian, a holy life will produce the deepest impression. Lighthouses blow no horns, they only shine. We're reminded by the account of Nehemiah. We're reminded by the modern day story of Marcus Rashford and what he's been able to achieve. That using his position of power, using the position that God has put him in, using that place for good, standing up for what is wrong, we see that actually, when you shine, when you lead your life in a certain way, change happens and people notice that there is a difference. So this evening, are we shining? Are we shining to bring life over material? Are we shining to make sure that injustice and equality is beaten? And there's Jesus' followers who are called to shine to those around us. That might not be such a big thing as combating or taking the government to account on holiday hunger. That might not be being a world leader and rebuilding city walls. But for each of us, there will be a light that we have to shine to those people around us who don't yet know Jesus. And that light is what's really important as we build back better and build back into what a new world and a new community could look like. We're reminded in Luke 22:27 that Jesus says, "I am among you as one who serves." And as we move in to take communion together this evening, we're reminded by this passage that Jesus promises that he is among us as an equal. We're not alone, and that he comes to us in every situation, in every injustice, in anything that we feel angry about or annoyed about, any place that we invite him into. And he says, "Let's do this together." So as we question, as we wonder what the world will look like in 2021, in 2022, as we continue to work out what the things look like, let's remember to build back better, but let's do it together with each other. Let's do it with Jesus among us. And I reckon what we'll see happen will be far more than we can expect. So as we take communion tonight, what are those areas? What are those places? Who are those people that God is calling you to stand up for? But we also need to remember that ultimately this starts with Jesus. Jesus treats us all as equal, invites us to his table, and he says, "I love you as much as I love everybody else." So come this evening, take communion, and be reminded of that love.